Greetings, Sun Sounds listeners, and welcome to the Philosopher Program. This is your host, Sun Sounds of Arizona volunteer reader, Candy Lewis, along with my co-host, Bullet Lewis. And we begin our program with some daily selections from Science of Mind, Guide for Spiritual Living. And the theme this month is Raise Your Voice. Good one for us right now. The daily guides for May 2025 were written by Diana Ensign. Nature does not hurry, yet everything is accomplished. I am honored to write the daily guides for this month's theme, Raise Your Voice, as someone who spent a lifetime learning not only to find my voice, but also to put it to use in the world. The topic is divinely perfect, both challenging and empowering. While I've been reading this magazine for more than 20 years, diving into May's topic revealed layers of healing as well as wonderful blessings. Truly, life's gifts await us each new day. Diana J. Ensign, J.D., is an award-winning author and essayist who writes about the human spirit. Her book, Faith, Hope, Action, is a Gold and Silver Bookfest Award winner, and Heart Guide and the Freedom to Be are Independent Publisher Book Awards, IPPY, gold medal winners. Her enduring message is love, compassion, and service to humanity. Visit Diana Ensign, DIANA ENSIGN.com to learn more. Believe as though you are. There are only two ways to live your life. One is as though nothing is a miracle. The other is as though everything is a miracle, attributed to Albert Einstein. Believe as though you are, and you will be. Ernest Holmes. In addition to my Mind Your Mind button, I have a small stone on my altar with the word belief painted on it. Such affirmations on our spiritual journey are helpful. They don't necessarily tell us what to do or how to do it. Rather, they are like signposts pointing us toward a beneficial and joyful destination. I believe we all are guided along a life journey that is meant for us. I believe we know the path marked out for our soul. I believe we need courage and bravery at times so we can walk our unique path. I also believe this. Life wants us to be happy. Life wants us to be fulfilled. Life wants the best for us. What do you believe? What leads you forward in a healthy way? What path do you wish to trod? Do you have special mementos or objects that encourage you on your spiritual journey? Take a couple of slow, deep breaths. Close your eyes for a moment and simply feel your breath as it travels through your body. When you open your eyes, ask for guidance on the highest and greatest good for your life. Perhaps write out your hopes and dreams. Note the affirmations that support these desires. Now, believe it is possible for you to fully live that vision. Then take one or two small action steps in that direction. Only you can swing open the gate and walk toward the life waiting for you. Affirmation. I believe in miracles. I believe in life. I believe in a higher power and in a higher purpose for my life. Make time to play. Every child is an artist. The problem is how to remain an artist once we grow up. Pablo Picasso. Yesterday is not, tomorrow is not, but today, bright with hope and filled with promise, is mine. Today I live. Ernest Holmes. For all our technological advances, our lives continue to become more complex. Many of our everyday processes now require online forms, verifications, and passwords for everything. We have electronic access to vast knowledge, but not to wisdom. The Tao Te Ching states, I have just three things to teach, simplicity, patience, compassion. This passage encourages us to be simple like a child without overcomplicating everything, to have patience with ourselves and with others, and to practice compassion toward all beings. A wonderful simplicity can be seen in young children who find joy in picking dandelions, dancing in mud puddles, laughing while blowing bubbles, singing in the grocery store, and drawing pictures of flowers and the sun. They're not worried about being good enough when they sing, dance, or draw. They simply enjoy playful moments. When is the last time you took time to play? Recently, while visiting my eldest daughter and her fiancé in New York City, the three of us attended a paint party. The teaching artist talked us through the process of painting trees in bloom near a pond. It was fun, just drawing lines with a paintbrush and adding dabs of color. What did you enjoy doing as a child? What might you do as an adult just for fun? perhaps try your hand at an adult coloring book, or join a drumming circle, or experiment with a craft project. Maybe seek out an organization that offers creative classes for adults. These lifelong learning courses can be a great opportunity for joyful exploration. Affirmation. Today I set aside time to do something fun that brings me joy. And from the Daily Word, published by Unity, guidance. As I move forward, I trust divine guidance. Trying new things, going to unfamiliar places, even risking my heart by being vulnerable can feel daunting. My impulse to dream, explore, and trust is divinely inspired. It is divine within me, calling me higher, inviting me to a richer, fuller experience of life. As I follow the guidance to open myself to life, I also believe I will be guided to the right and perfect opportunities to stretch and grow. I step forward in faith, and as I do, I feel my confidence grow as my inhibitions fade. As I heed my guidance, I feel more and more alive as life opens up before me. I am a child of God, of Spirit, of the universe, deserving of the world's abundance. I'm divinely guided to a rich experience of life. Celebrate. I celebrate this day with joy and gratitude. Every day I can discover something to celebrate. I can give thanks for the perseverance that helps me overcome challenges and adversity, even when the odds are against me. I may commemorate events of the past or enjoy the sweetness of anticipation of the future. Today, I celebrate the love of friends and family. These are the people who enrich my life, who support me in good times and in times of struggle. I honor those who lived before me and give thanks for their contributions to the world and to my life. I celebrate the good in my life, giving thanks for blessings of the past and for those to come. Whatever I celebrate, I do so with love, appreciation, and joy. Celebrating keeps my heart open to the many ways good is unfolding in my life. And from Mark Nepo's The Book of Awakening, Having the Life You Want by Being Present to the Life You Have, our essential clearness. Like clouds moving in water, problems make me forget I am clear. Water reflects everything it encounters. This is so commonplace that we think water is blue, when in fact, it has no color. Amazingly, while soft and flowing, water as the ocean or lake or even as the smallest puddle of rain, takes on the image of the entire world without ever losing its essential clearness. Of course, it is not so easy for us. As emotional beings, we are constantly losing ourselves in the image of everything we experience. But nonetheless, the nature of water can help us understand our very human struggles. I began, like so many of us, in a household where it was somehow my job to be the lightning rod for the family's tensions of unexpressed emotion. In this way, I learned to be a problem solver, a rescuer, a caretaker. Through two marriages and countless friendships, I loved by taking on the clouded emotions of those I loved. The tension of other people's unexpressed emotions kept me from feeling my own depth and clarity. My life became one of turbulence, always struggling to keep my head above the cloudy surface. But the water, the glorious water everywhere, has taught me that we are more than what we reflect or love. This is the work of compassion, to embrace everything clearly without imposing who we are and without losing who we are. It is, to be sure, an endless and impossible task, but though we can never be as clear as water, it helps to remember that while the very real problems we face are the living things we must handle, they are not the essential current of our lives. Beneath the clouds, water desires only to flow, and beneath our tensions and problems, the human spirit wants only to embrace and soften. The next time a loved one voices frustration, disappointment, or pain, notice your reaction. Are you problem-solving or accepting what they are saying? Are you trying to cheer them up or bear witness to their experience? Are you left holding their pain or deepened for what is shared? If you can, receive this pain as if it were a stone dropped into the clear, moving depth of who you are. We return to Science of Mind for Eugene Holden's monthly personal affirmations. Raise your voice. I believe. We often receive ideas that may bring joy to the world. Then the fear of looking stupid raises its head. Guess what? That fear of looking stupid holds you back. You are here to shine. Affirm, I am the living expression of God, of Spirit, of the universe. Since God cannot fail, I cannot fail. I am successful in everything I do. I believe in me. on fire. When you allow it, those ideas that may bring joy to the world set you on fire. The internal flame burns away everything that is not aligned with that inspired idea. Go forth. You cannot fail. Declare, I am on fire with this divine idea. I am guided and directed to experience the very best life has to offer. I am on fire for spirit. Simply surrender. Surrender has two sides. Side one, surrender everything that does not serve you or the divine idea for your life. Side two, surrender to everything that does serve you and that idea. Simply surrender. I surrender all the thoughts of fear, doubt, and worry. Now I surrender to God's spirits, the universe's highest idea of my life. I surrender to joy. I surrender to abundance. I surrender to love. I simply surrender everything. You got this. Trust me when I say you've got this. There is a power for good within you that seeks expression as you. You have everything you need to succeed. Believe that you are fully supported. You've got this. Declare, I have everything I need to succeed. I am fully supported by that which breathes my breath. I have confidence in myself. I believe in me. I am grateful for my life. And so it is. And we return to the daily word. First, for the monthly affirmations for May, inner peace. I am calm, centered in divine peace. Understanding. I am a radiating center of light and understanding. Healing. Claiming divine life, I heal. Prosperity. With a consciousness of plenty, I prosper. World harmony. I am a presence of love in the world. And Morning Walk Beatitude by Laura Landon. As I walk, opening to the splendor of creation, I inhale and imagine God's illuminating breath. I am blessed. I am one. As I search and find God everywhere, in sunlight, grazing grasses, edging clouds, and bathing my upturned face, I am filled. I am fed. As I discern and follow divine direction, a nudge from the leaf brushing my shoulder, a beckoning glimmer in the distance, I am found. I am confirmed. As I listen for the Holy Spirit, an inner whisper, a sigh from the breeze, I am healed. I am whole. And from the same issue, an article by Sonia C. Thompson, For God and Country, an Army Chaplain's Journey. The motto of the U.S. Army Chaplain Corps is Pro Deo e Patria, for God and Country. It has also been my personal motto for as long as I can remember. I grew up in a military family and was surrounded by soldiers throughout my life. When I was a girl, my father, a U.S. Air Force soldier and former prisoner of war, was part of a select team chosen to go to France to set up a joint base after World War II. My memories of that time include reading about Jesus and my heroes in the Bible, especially Daniel and David. Even as a child, I felt the presence of a loving God. I read these stories as I waited in an old building on the base until my father was ready to leave for the day. Soldiers were always around me in some way, and for as long as I can remember, I have loved and respected their spirit and devotion to duty. As I grew up, our family moved from one assignment to the next in Europe, Asia, and the United States. Between those assignments, we sometimes returned to our hometown. One of my lasting childhood memories was time spent with my beloved Aunt Gertie. We would sit together under a tree, and she would read to me from her Unity magazine. Her passion and excitement were contagious as she shared the contents with me. I felt her pure joy as her enthusiasm rubbed off on me. I felt the presence of God during those times with Aunt Gertie, which led to my ongoing discovery of Unity. The teachings reinforced my intuitive understanding of a God that was intimate, loving, and powerful, and showed me how we have those qualities within us. Aunt Gertie was my earliest Unity teacher and helped form my lifelong theological foundation. Years later, my love of soldiers and my interest in God would come together, drawing me, with my four children in tow, to Unity Village, Missouri. I felt such joy to visit the sacred grounds and see the Italianate architecture and be in the company of some of the Unity Movement's great thinkers and writers. I worked for the Unity Prayer Ministry before pursuing my seminary education and Unity ordination, along with my love of country, which led to my career as a U.S. Army chaplain. Even though I was steeped in Unity teachings, I was to work with all soldiers, families, and other chaplains of diverse religious backgrounds. My fellow chaplains and I worked together, answering the call to provide for the free exercise of religion and to minister to the soul of each soldier. Wherever I was stationed, I relied upon Unity to send me numerous copies of Daily Word with each new issue. The soldiers eagerly received and cherished them. They found inspiration in the affirmative messages, helping them to believe in themselves and their ability to do whatever they were called to do. For instance, during a mandatory weapons qualification, where soldiers were waiting to demonstrate their proficiency, I saw several waiting soldiers leaning against trees or sitting on the ground reading the Daily Word they had been carrying in their pockets. Knowing God, Spirit, the universe was present with and within them gave them the confidence in their ability to demonstrate their skill. Serving at Walter Reed Army Medical Center, I heard thousands of stories of soldiers who acted upon divine guidance, sometimes at a moment's notice. One soldier, T.T., described standing in the doorway of his tent when he heard the roar of his inner voice yelling, "Move!" He moved seconds before the tent exploded. The blast wounded him, but he survived. Another soldier, B.L., heeded his inner guidance to roll quickly into a shallow ravine. Doing so hid him from a squad of enemy soldiers who jumped over the ravine without noticing him. I witnessed soldiers find inspiration in Daily Word and believe in the power of God, of Spirit, of the universe. I heard their stories of divine guidance and witnessed their dependence on Spirit within, which deepened my gratitude for my life's work. My 22-year career as a minister and a chaplain gave me the opportunity to devote my professional life to soldiers. My work required me to reassure each individual that God, Spirit, the universe, is in and around them in every instance, even during moments of danger or loneliness. In fact, the most frequent request I received was, "Pray with me, chaplain." Honoring soldiers' strength and courage inspired my chaplaincy service and will bless me always. I thank God for the sacred privilege of serving soldiers and my country. Chaplain Lieutenant Colonel Sonia C. Thompson, U.S. Army, retired, served her last 6 years overseas on assignments to U.S. Headquarters, Europe, in Heidelberg, Germany, and as a NATO chaplain in Brunsum, Netherlands. She retired from the Command and General Staff College, Fort Leavenworth, Kansas. She resides near a lake in Missouri, near her beloved Unity Village. And we return to Science of Mind for, with apologies to the other columnists, my favorite monthly column, Murphy's Dogma. Pause with perspective. First 10 words. Conversations with Murphy, a 14-pound dog. Most people think I can read their minds. The truth is, most people can't read their own minds. I have noticed that the first 10 words my people say in the morning become a prophecy for their whole day. They don't see it. I hear them say, "It's going to be a long day. I'm really not looking forward to this afternoon's meeting. You know, I really hate Mondays, and Tuesdays aren't much better." They say, "This whole world is falling apart. You just can't trust most people. I think I would like to stay in bed for the rest of the year." What follows are days that live up to whatever they say while having their morning coffee. It really is kind of amazing. I get excited just thinking about going for a walk. It is the same walk I walk every day and have been walking for the last 3 years. The truth is, I think it is an amazing adventure filled with surprise smells, unexpected birds, dogs, and people, and I have yet to be disappointed. I wish my people would describe each new day of life as if it were an amazing adventure instead of an exhaustive obstacle course that you can't recover from in a 2-day weekend. I think the humans should smile at the mirror when they wash their faces in the morning and say, "I love you," and declare this day to be a fabulous and amazing adventure. Murphy the Human Whisperer watches over his human, Reverend Bob Luckin, when he isn't working on his column. Send your questions to murphy@csl.org. Regretfully, he cannot reply to all email. And from the same issue, an article by one of my favorite authors, Tama Keeves, Siding with Your Undiluted Light. It is heartbreaking to feel disconnected from ourselves or disconnected from our sense of well-being, the grace of feeling that our lives made sense or are moving in a direction of good. But if you're human and aware, you will go through these times. It's inevitable. It's soul-wrenching and terrible. It's also workable. You will have to work at staying connected to your light. You must keep weeding if you want a garden. Otherwise, the weeds win. Years ago in a meditation, I cried out to my inner teacher, "How do I reach you? What am I supposed to focus on?" I got this message back from the deepest part of the diamond cave of my interior world. "I need you to be the beloved. Be the beloved." Say, what now? I knew I was being asked to take my casual interest in faith and self-actualization and go deeper, go truer, go all the way. I knew I had to start walking forward without self-doubt, to trust in the radical love of an energy I couldn't fathom but could not deny. I knew it meant I needed to trust myself and my life and allow it to unfold in a way that showed me I was guided and that I could trust. I also knew I'd never see my life this way if I didn't look for it. I had to own this birthright I so often rejected. I have been suspicious of myself, poking holes in my own new tires. Yet it seems faith requires activation. It requires engagement. It doesn't just happen. Second-guessing myself wasn't helping me. It was keeping me from going deeper into my best life. Only commitment and experience would heal me. Self-doubt was not self-inquiry. Self-doubt was the rejection of my power and of everything I really believed. It was time to stop telling myself I was ineffectual. I had the edge that gave me every advantage. I wasn't limited to the perception of my reptilian brain. I possessed this secret river within me, a current of deep knowing brilliance, an energy sourced in limitlessness. I command powerful faculties. The universe loves us. Ernest Holmes wrote, "The life of the spirit is my life. All of its strength is my strength. Its power is my power." Now I was ready to stop living as though my life were a jumble of unrelated events, all because the universe loves me. The universe loves everything. It is the nature of sentience. When I dropped from my head to my heart, I could feel this nexus. Part of me railed, "How is believing in a loving universe realistic? There is genocide, racism, blue algae in the lakes of my childhood, corrupt politicians, and global warming. And on a personal level, someone dropped out of a class, which goes to show the universe hates me. Also on that personal level, I'm messy. Will never have long legs, and feel vaguely threatened by AI, and am afraid to type that. Sometimes I feel like I'm jetting on a spaceship for one, with despondency and anxiety as my co-pilots. How does focusing on rose petals change this? And yet, even as my inner tantrum spewed cynicism and a few truly unnecessary comments about a certain muffin-top situation, I felt peaceful, like when you know you've lost steam for an argument. Really, once you touch the truth, it's non-negotiable. I knew what I knew. Or at least on a good day I did. On a day when the marigolds blazed orange, when I had strong coffee and a breeze wafted by and the wind chimes tinkled, I knew there was an unbearable love in this world, and I wanted to serve it. I didn't need to know the name of this mystery because I knew the certainty. I also knew that when I felt love, my doubts disappeared. This reverberated like a gong, and as they say, once the bell is rung, it can't be unrung. That kind of knowing feels like homecoming, a blast of well-being, the way the operating system is supposed to function. Maybe you know what I mean. Besides, I had experience, proof of concept, as they say. When I believed in something bigger, I was like Rambo, baby, but with a halo, strong enough to move a grain of sand and a mountain, or to get out of bed and move past defeat. Love was the antidote to my ego's siren call of futility. Be the beloved. I knew what this commitment asked. I would listen to my instincts more than to my defenses. Yes, there was a part of me that doubted, but there was a part of me that did not. There was a part of me that knew I was here to thrive. It was time to jump into the pool and swim in the goodness of this life and not let my cynicism or practical-mindedness protect me further. Be the beloved. Can you imagine if you didn't ever have to experience life as trampled grass? What if you knew something in you could rise again and again? What if you knew the radical presence of your guidance was unconditional and instantaneously available? What if you could plug into a source of dynamism that could navigate and instigate anything? You can. You were born with these powers. Listen to a voice of wild divine love within you, a voice of fearless possibility. This life force is not limited by circumstances. It is limited by your refusal to allow what you already know. A Course in Miracles teaches that we are far too tolerant of letting our minds wander. We indulge our limiting thoughts. We talk ourselves into disconnection. And sometimes our emotional wounds or traumas hijack us into feeling alone. But we are not alone. There's something greater going on. You have the resources to metabolize pain and walk among us with astonishing powers. Your alignment and vibration can change the nature of the world. This is the power of your life. It is the power of my life. And most of us have barely scratched the surface of our consciousness. Believe in higher possibilities. I don't want to be a drooling idiot believing in imaginary beings, my coaching client, a fast-talking trial lawyer, says. But then I also don't want to be an arrogant fool not using powers if I have them, especially if that's what I'm really here for. This is the sane person's dilemma. Yet this is what an exceptional life is all about. An exceptional life asks you to embrace your maverick sensibilities, to commit to your faith instead of to your fear. For far too long, we learn to be reasonable and measure ourselves by the world's material data instead of listening to our own instincts and following the direction of our unquantifiable souls. That diminished focus is a guarantee for diminishment. Yes, it takes power to go your own way, but doing so gives you power to go your own way. What if you could trust what you know, even when you don't know how you know it? This may be your time to tap a strength far beyond your intellectual understanding. Staying in your brain can cost too much. Life is the leap, because as poet Mark Nepo writes, if you try to comprehend air before breathing it, you will die. My struggles keep pushing me into more and more commitment. My lack of commitment is a hole. Fears get in through this hole and dilute my energy and movement. I'm going to plug up that hole. I will be the beloved of the universe and of myself. Circumstances do not change my identity. I own my perspective. I own my selfhood. I own my life. Being the beloved means dedicating yourself to the one voice inside you that will open the gates to everything you really want. That one voice is love. I'm going to ask you to take your rightful place here. Side with your light, not the times you don't feel your light. Know who you are meant to be and do not continue to demean yourself. Own your light-infused potential, your self-realized, shake off your shackles and weep with gratitude potential. The world cannot tell you who you are. You are here to tell the world who you are. Commit to what you know within. Reject your self-rejection. I assure you, it's not naive to open to a brilliant energy and life-affirming self. Look for it. Find it. Spend time cultivating this relationship. Dare to crack open the full truth and power of your being. Go all the way. And this is from Kiev's latest book, Learning to Trust Yourself, Breaking Through the Blocks That Hold You Back. It was released in March 2025, and you can find this guide to self-reliance and unlocking your inner genius at tamakieves.com, and that's all one word, tamakieves.com. And she gives us the self-trust codes. Here are the 15 self-trust codes that can help you focus on your empowered identity. 1. The right relationship to myself changes everything. 2. I can hear the voice of self-genius when I stop listening to the voice of self-negation. 3. I see more of what I look for. I focus on the evidence of abundance in my life. 4. When I love what is in front of me, everything comes to me. 5. I burn up the pictures of where I think I should be. I'm on a journey that's never been lived before. 6. I craft my perspective because my perspective becomes my world. 7. There is no static reality. Everything shifts when I do. 8. My desires are holy. I have them for a reason. I follow my breadcrumbs. 9. I give myself permission to be in process. Clarity comes from process. 10. I am in the right life. I am guided. I am making the right decisions at this time. 11. If there weren't something here for me, I wouldn't be here. Magic is here. 12. I have a trajectory and something always works. Something always works. 13. I go beyond casual belief. I end the weakness of waffling. I leap. 14. I show up. I slow down. I stop resisting difficulty. I move beyond my history. 15. I side with my light. I side with who I know I can be. I dismiss other possibilities. We pause for a moment to remind you that you are listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona, 24 hours of programming from over 300 publications, and you're currently listening to the Philosopher Program. And if you miss a program, you can get it on demand at sunsounds.org/broadcast info and audio/on demand. We return now to the Great Awakening, Our Prophesied Transformation and the Attainment of Embodied Enlightenment by Mike Dooley, in conversation with six renowned channels. And we had started Chapter 4 last week, The Role Love Plays in Self-Realization, with Matt Kahn. And he's an incomparable spiritual teacher, highly attuned empathic healer, powerful speaker, and captivating author. And he channels information, which has been very helpful for many people. And here we have Mike asking Matt, how do we know where to begin healing ourselves when we've unintentionally allowed our ego to trick and delude us for so long, for a lifetime? We usually don't know that the ego has played such a clever role in our lives, yet we can often sense something is not right. How do we navigate to that place of recognizing what we most need so that we can feel complete? There's a couple of ways we can go through this. First, look to your body for any kind of heaviness, pressure, or pain. If there's any kind of disturbance, locate it. Ask, where in my body do I feel this? Then ask that part of your body, which has its own consciousness, what are the words you need to hear from me in order to help you heal and move this energy? We're not just trying to move the energy. We're appealing to the consciousness of the body that says, hey, I'm a part of you. I'm actually one of your guides. Our job is to notice the disturbance as an attention-seeking device from the most innocent levels, and to hear the whimpers and cries and pleas that show up as physical pain, exhaustion, or depletion that are actually circulating trauma loop memories from our limbic system. Just locate where that is in your body and ask this part that feels separate. Honor its own separate consciousness by offering, "What do you need from me in order to take your next step of healing?" Sometimes just asking that question won't elicit an immediate answer, because that part of you needing help says, oh my God, I just love when you engage with me like this. What it really loves is being able to give an answer from its perspective instead of it being projected upon like a parent who says, I know what my child needs. Okay, maybe you do, but you can also ask a child, what do you need? If there's no answer, we can be the adult. But to engage these parts with the respect and sovereignty for their own consciousness literally opens the wound up and says, now I know that you are my faithful liberator, and I'll let you into this healing instead of trying to hide from you. There's a part of every fear, however, that's afraid of its own death. Our wounds are afraid that their healing will be their death. In actuality, healing transforms shapes into different forms. If, however, a part of you identifies with one thing, and you know healing is going to make you different for the wound that feels like a death. Our wounds are hiding from the light, afraid of death, and our journey is to help those wounds realize, I am love. I am here to rescue you. I am taking you into the light. You are being reborn. You fear that this is death, but I'm going to hold your hand and be with you so that you know this is a rebirth and not an assassination plot. We can and do love these parts by talking to them and getting to know these parts of ourselves emotionally versus mentally. The ego often believes it can sidestep emotional connections with over-rationalization. But what we're realizing in this world is that doesn't work. It only creates imbalanced human beings and an unsustainable planet. Mike, would you say that mastery of self on a path of awakening and enlightenment is about bringing love to areas of your essence that have not received it so far? I would agree with that 100%, and I'll tell you why. Having taught in many communities and to people of various paths, sometimes, and it's an energy thing, I can walk into a room of beings that are on a hot path to awakening. There are certain audiences for whom awakening is the thing. What I can feel energetically and empathically is when their heart is opening to a love affair with service. That's when the awakening is pure. Other times I notice that they only want to wake up because they just hate being the character they can't stop being in their life. Then awakening becomes a form of self-denial. Some people look at awakening as, I'm going to trade up to a bigger truth and get the hell away from this person I hate being. Maybe they'll give me a new IP address and better manifestations. But true awakening comes when we love ourselves. The Buddha, under the Bodhi tree, said, I will not move. Everything comes to me. That's a stance of love. When we are loving, we are cultivating presence. We are not moving toward things. We're letting things move toward us. The very path of loving ourselves puts us in an alignment that allows awakening to be triggered. But for people on the path who haven't done the emotional work, if they suddenly have an expansion of consciousness because the truth dropped in and broke them open, it can send them into a dark night of the soul. If emotional healing comes first, awakening will happen along the way. Then, once awakening happens, we don't have to go into this crazy Willy Wonka boat ride and revisit all the things that we either didn't see or overlooked. By loving ourselves before and through awakening, we love ourselves after awakening. Love is playing a role at every stage. That's what we should align with first. The dimensions. Mike, can you speak to the third dimension and fourth dimension? What's going on in the world right now? Is this polarity? Is this the Book of Revelation come to life? Is this the new Mayan calendar? What and why? Yeah, we're now living through the Book of Revelation, the musical. This is a very pivotal part of history. But just to understand dimensionally, third dimension is the dimension the Earth has been in for a long time. It's a dimension of individual expression. That's a positive thing. It's the dimension of determination, where you're willing to take a journey of time and allow things to evolve in what seems to be slow motion compared to the instantaneous manifestation of quantum reality. Also, in third dimension, we're experiencing an individuality that makes us feel separate from one another, separate from each other's hearts, and separate from the universe. The negative aspect of this dimension arises when we resist moving through it. We're not meant to stay here. The fourth dimension is the dimension of time, the time we all require to embrace our individuality, to heal the wounds of the individual journey, and to allow the individual to be a unique expression of spirit. Fourth dimension is also where people get into spiritual teachings that are akin to fear-based superstition. It's really hot on conspiracy theories. It's like the Burning Man Festival of spiritual evolution. Fifth dimension is unity consciousness, where even though we're individuals, we also have the realization we are one. We're not so one that we lose ourselves, nor are we so into our individual consciousness that we overlook our oneness. It's a dimension of balance. It's the dimension where the internal expansion of your light starts to manifest outside of you and reflects back. The third dimension is often the starting point where we are meeting ourselves as individuals. Then we get to experience the expansion of the individual through a journey of time to realize the oneness that includes all things and that celebrates its oneness through a play of diversity. And from that space, as we start to really acknowledge diversity, we start to live in a different world where all rules and ways of behaving encompass tolerance, inclusivity, and equality. So right now we're watching the incredible process of a world waking up, where society is transforming itself into a living expression of unity consciousness. Mike, would you say that we are fourth dimension ever since 2012? The year 2012 was when Earth went four-dimensional, and 2019 is when it went full five-dimensional. And now every one of us, if we're meant to continue, has to be a closer match to where Earth is. It's believed by many that until this happens, Earth can't further ascend. This is the reason why all hell is breaking loose. Earth has ascended into the fifth dimension, and human beings must catch up. Mike, what might be some of the things we see or experience while this happened? We'll start seeing people driven by their pain and wounds, beginning to take more responsibility for their behavior instead of projecting these onto others and hiding in righteousness. People will stop abusing one another once they become conscious of truth. The telltale sign of any villainous character is that they're convinced they're the hero. That's part of their delusion. What determines a hero from a villain is a hero always acts in a place of integrity for all. A villain uses integrity only with self-interest. To get a little Joseph Campbell, what we're going to start seeing in the hero's redemption is their unconsciousness becoming more self-aware and self-reflective. They'll even be able to communicate after the fact. Hey, that wasn't my highest truth. I think I hurt you. I'm so sorry. This is an evolutionary leap. And at the same time, there will be our own incredible superpowers and abilities that we start seeing made manifest. It's just a matter of which of these powers is most practical for the world we live in. The truth is, all of us are already experiencing otherworldly phenomenon. Dying in order to live. We're all evolving spiritual masters, finally becoming aware of our mastery. As we each step into our mastery, we'll start to experience the space between things. We'll start to experience dimensions within dimensions. We'll start to experience waking life as a bigger dream state. Things just won't seem as real as they used to. We'll begin to know things on a level without needing the ego to confirm its validity. We'll finally be able to trust our feelings and allow the senses of our inner guidance to lead us as it becomes safer to face our feelings in the most loving way, where we start to live our lives fully present, from a place of humility, not from a place of judgment. For us to taste our timeless nature, we have to confront our own egoic mortality. I think one of the most amazing things about awakening is that it helps us endure and survive endless psychological deaths. Only by dancing with death in this way can love become the highest priority. Our old selves have to die in order to know how to live. Until we've experienced this, we won't know how to embrace the choice to love without it being an option that benefits the ego. The beauty of love as a choiceless choice is the greatest gift that awakening gives us. When we awaken, we don't need to leave the body in order to transcend the limitations of our human condition. We can expand our consciousness to where it would be in the heavenly realm while staying within this earth plane, still embodied, where that expanded energy can tangibly take shape and form as a universe, knowing itself at a more profound level than ever before. More on the ego and the games it plays. Mike, I want to quote your book, All for Love. Even if the ego constantly got its way, it would be no happier than before. So not only does the ego not know what it really wants, but when it gets what it thought it wanted, it's still not going to be happy. I think we can all relate to this. Can you tell us, what is ego? Ego is a spectrum of psychological density. It helps us be rooted and grounded on Earth. For example, if you had no ego, you would walk out into a snowstorm naked, forgetting to put on a jacket or clothes. Without ego, there's no sense of distinction, and you lose the ability to function in the world. The ego helps us have the experience of being individuals in a world of other people. However, when ego is where you find your sense of identity, you wind up making decisions from the pain and patterning of unprocessed trauma instead of responding from the empowerment of your highest wisdom. When we identify with ego, it's common to believe, I'm better than this person, or that person's better than me. The ego likes to put itself or other people on a pedestal. Then, of course, when we put people on pedestals, there soon follows a compulsion to tear them down because we resent them for being bigger than we perceive ourselves to be. The ego inevitably unravels all it creates. It's quite a self-fulfilling prophecy. And yet, from a higher perspective, all of this can be seen as the ebbing and flowing of a psychological density that helps loosen our grip of attachment and soften our edges for deeper healing to occur. Seeing this is not a judgment. It's just where one is in their journey. Just as a butterfly would never judge itself for having the cocoon it needs in order to break free and be reborn, the question still remains, no matter where anyone is in their journey, can I love myself enough to face my patterns instead of hiding my pain by comparing myself to others? Mike, are our egos a function of beliefs? Doesn't everything boil down to focus, thoughts, and beliefs? Can we work on these to lighten the load of our egos? Or do we simply need to shine more love on the ego? If we find limiting beliefs within ourselves, those beliefs are here to be loved. So we say to the belief, you are a part of me that's here to be loved. Typically, people want to watch their thoughts, track their beliefs, and unravel them as they deem necessary. This is a very masculine way of working with the masculine mechanism of mind. If we're going to understand the law of polarity, what the masculine mechanism needs is to be balanced by its opposite, a feminine vibration. In awakening, we're actually bringing the heart and mind into an equal space. The mind enters the heart. The heart enters the mind. If we find limiting beliefs, the limiting beliefs are healed as they are loved. Limiting beliefs and thoughts are always reflective of the traumas we carry. The density of ego tells us how much work we've done or how much work needs to be done. all of which can only be resolved with love. Otherwise, we're wrestling with ourselves on the battlefield of psychoanalysis. As consciousness awakens, we're not solving the mind's issue on the level of mind. We're letting the heart heal the mind, or letting the mind hold space for the heart as they meet in the center of our being. Mike, but does the ego go away forever? Does it perish? The ego experiences its own death, but what it perceives as its own death is actually a rebirth of the soul. Because nothing in life really dies. It just changes shape and form. Just like when people die and leave the planet, they're going to a different dimension by changing shape and form. So we may call it ego death, but it's the ego's rebirth. The ego will never know rebirth until it's on the other side. Once it's on the other side, it's no longer as it was. The ego perceives change, or anything other than what it prefers, as death, which it seeks to avoid at all costs. So what we are doing is being the love that's helping it adjust to its rebirth in spite of its fears. Question from an audience member. When unpleasant things happen in our lives, is it because we've been attracting the wrong things or because we're not using the law of attraction properly? Subjectively, we perceive things as positive or negative in our own way. Any judgment of bad things depends on our chosen perceptions. We alone decide what's positive or negative, and whatever we choose simply reflects our beliefs, not reality. It's not like things or manifestations don't exist until we say so, and it's not like we're attracting havoc because our law of attraction muscles are broken. The law of attraction is more about being in alignment with spirit, and the things that we say we're going to create are the universe's way of saying a manifestation is closer to you than you are to it. So be still, open up, and allow it to be received in whatever form it wants to take. That's a more detached view of how the law of attraction can actually free us from the grip of the ego's control, instead of trying to teach us spiritual ways to control reality. Audience member question. How do you make space for grief while also embracing our eternal connection to whatever was lost? Always make space for grief. The minute grief comes up, allow it to be felt and embrace it as the love of divinity holding all wounds as they heal. Whenever we're consoling ourselves, we are on the same side as the universe. We are divinity in form. In truth, there's no space between grief and eternal connection. It's just that paralyzing levels of grief seem so contrary to feelings of joy, connection, and expansion. Obviously, they're very different emotional states, but spirit is not any emotional state. Spirit is the infinite source of love that holds all emotional states, like waves coming and going in the ocean of existence. Grief is a wave. Spirit is the ocean. Our breath is the remembrance that we are the ocean witnessing each wave. When we are consoling our feelings, when we're holding an emotional wave with love, we are then being the ocean, healing its waves, and helping create calmer waters versus choppier tides. This is the remembrance of spirit. No matter how big a tidal wave becomes, it cannot threaten or drown the ocean holding it. No matter how painful our emotions may be or fearful any thought may appear, they're waves of expression requesting love return them home to the ocean from their adventure of seeking the shore. As we learn to love ourselves more, not less, we activate the power of divine remembrance that equally brings our healing journey to a place of resolution while learning to shine our light at a higher frequency for the evolution of our world. No matter how conflicted or at the brink of extinction humanity may seem, in a world of endless questions, love is the only answer. Question from an audience member. I'm taking care of an adult child with disabilities. Because of this responsibility, I can't pursue what I want in my life or even just be me. I'm getting older and tired. How can I feel better about this situation? Whenever you're in the presence of someone with a disability or taking care of them, or for anyone experiencing a responsibility that seems to distract from what you wish to be doing with your life, which is heartbreaking to process and shame-inducing, silently say in your mind, "Thank you for helping me. Thank you for helping me dedicate myself to loving service. Thank you for helping me remember that love is a choice, not a sacrifice." If we are a caretaker of an adult child with disabilities, even as we feel the obligation of that choice, we have to find the space to see what else is there to be chosen. Every day, wake up and set the intention, may I consciously choose what is choosing me, and may I say thank you to how the creations that are choosing me make me a brighter and better version of myself, even if it's creating the space to admit how much I don't like doing this. May I be honest. May I be honorable. May I say thank you, and may I choose what is choosing me. And with this, you will come to see you don't have to endure the hardship of sacrifice. You'll actually allow the situation to be a doorway into eternal freedom. Mike, do you feel different levels of love? Are there different vibrations of love? Sure, there are different vibrations of love. There's personal love, romantic love, parental love, sibling love, friendship love, and there's love that we feel from spirit. The higher we go in vibration, the more intense the love. The higher you go, the more potent the love is as a creator of reality. When love is high enough in vibration, it's not just two hearts satisfying one another, it's new worlds being created by their lights merging as one. When we talk about paths like Tantra, lovemaking becomes a very sacred, intentional, spiritual way of accessing higher dimensional realities. This comprehension and the process of honoring connection, physical, emotional, spiritual, becomes a gateway into unity with the divine. There are two levels to love. The higher the vibration, the more pure and the more potent a healer it becomes for ourselves and those we love. But the highest levels can only be accessed through various levels of integrity and conduct, which is part of the checks and balances of the universe. Audience member question, can you please offer help with panic attacks and fear? When these feelings arise, first say to yourself, I accept that this fear and panic is only here to be loved. Second, and this can be all you have to do when your feelings are just too overwhelming to say those words, simply have a seat somewhere, preferably somewhere private, and slowly count from 1 to 10. Then count slowly backwards from 10 back to 1. And then just feel. As you count, you'll feel everything relax. Your nervous system will go into a state of regulation. You may feel a part of you wants to count faster. That's just anxiety trying to move you beyond the moment faster than the moment is being resolved. Anxiety wants you to exceed the speed limit of consciousness. Count slowly to 10, then 10 back to 1. Allow yourself to pull back from a future possibility as you remain in the present moment. Do not rush through the moment faster than it's meant to be experienced. Mike, profound. Matt, I'm feeling deep gratitude to you for all that's been shared. I just want to say to everyone who may ever experience this transmission, thank you for your presence and participation. Thank you for being alive on the planet at this time. Thank you for shining your light, even if what you focus and fixate on may be how shut down you feel. Just by being alive on the planet right now, during one of the most intense and tumultuous times in recorded history, just by being alive, you are bringing light to this planet. You are embodying a vibrational frequency. As an individual, unique and unlike anyone else in history, you're bringing to this planet a vibration that has never been known before and will never be known again. No matter what you're personally doing with your choices, whether uplifting and loving yourself or getting down on yourself, it doesn't change the fact that you are fulfilling the highest mission of the universe, to deliver to this world, wherever you walk, and however you breathe, a unique vibrational frequency that only you can bring. I am here. I'm with you. I see you. I bow in your presence. It is you who I serve, and I serve you in the name of love. I love you. To find out more about Matt, his books, and his channeling, please visit Matt's website at www.mattkahn.org. Well, next week we will be meeting in Chapter 5, which is about developing the gifts of healing, channeling, and light language with Daniel Scranton. About Daniel. Daniel is a trance channel, spiritual teacher, and sound healer. He's been channeling the 12th dimensional non-physical collective known as the Creators since the fall of 2010. Since then, a wide array of other guides and collectives have spoken through him. Some of those include Archangel Michael, Archangel Gabriel, Kuan Yin, Yeshua, the Hathors, the Pleiadian High Council of Seven, and the Arcturian Council. He also channels light languages and healing overtones, has written 6 books, including his acclaimed series, Ascension, The Shift to the Fifth Dimension. The 4 cornerstones of the 9D Arcturian Council teachings. Aloha, Daniel. So happy you're with us. Please tell us where you are right now. Here I am. I'm on Mount Halikala in Maui, known by some as the heart chakra of planet Earth. Mike, somebody's got to live there. Not a bad gig. Nice manifesting. Please share with us the main teachings you channel from the Arcturians. Their emphasis has always been on acceptance, forgiveness, compassion, and unconditional love. Those 4 aspects of life are, I believe, everyone's purpose here and everyone's mission. Purpose and mission, contrary to popular thinking, have little to do with our line of work or career. Work and career have a place, but we all still have family life, friends, and people who bug us. We all have the things that come into our experience and make us feel certain things. That's the real work. That's what it's all about. And by addressing these 4 things, we ascend by doing that work on ourselves. Everything else is for the purpose of having those opportunities. Acceptance, forgiveness, compassion, and unconditional love. I do believe that's the right order to go in as well, because you can't just say, I'm going to forgive everybody, without first asking, do I accept that it happened? Do I acknowledge my participation in the co-creation of it? Because if you don't, if you maintain victimhood status, it's hard to say, okay, I forgive that person or those people. And we will continue with this next week. As always, I wish you a beautiful, joyous, and peaceful new week, and I look forward to being with you next time on our Philosopher Program.